This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be. Or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey. I'm your co-host, Zachary Frueling, and my other co-host, Suzanne Williamson, is not with us today. Instead, I'm joined by a special guest, Liam Smart, to discuss Voyager holiday vacation destinations. Liam, welcome to The Journey.
Hey, Zachary, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us. We don't regularly have guests on To The Journey, but you wrote to us saying you'd love to join us on To The Journey. You've made a couple of appearances on Trek FM podcasts, and you had an idea for a topic, Voyager holiday vacation destinations. And in a moment of weakness, we said, sure, why the hell not?
Yeah, exactly. No, I came in like a bull in a china shop and decided that, hey, I love TTJ. It was the first podcast I listened to on the network, and I figured, why not ask you guys, see if I can join?
And Suzanne was supposed to join us, but she's having microphone issues, so she cannot record a podcast right now. And rather than wait for her to get a new microphone, we said, well, just blaze ahead, you and I. So you get to be my special guest co-host on To the Journey today. So thanks
a lot. That's all good. It's a shame Suzanne's not here, but we'll try and fill in for her.
So, Liam, you came up with this topic idea to talk about Voyager holiday vacation destinations. What was the impetus of that idea? Why did you want to talk about that in particular?
Well, I kind of thought that with Voyager being so stuck out in the Delta Quadrant, they need to have some time to relax, to get away from everything. They're working for potentially 75 years to get home. And I thought, well, are there any places along the way that they could actually go to and kick back and relax? And yeah, the more I thought of it, the more probably not quite the best kind of holiday destinations.
I have to say that I don't immediately think of vacations when I think of Voyager. You know, the Delta Quadrant doesn't have a Risa, from what we can tell, right? So, and the characters that we do see taking vacations on Voyager are usually taking vacations in the holodeck.
Yeah.
Like when Tom and B'Elanna go on their honeymoon to the holodeck, or Captain Janeway does her Janeway error cosplay in the holodeck. There's not a lot of vacationing in Voyager. So I don't naturally think of Delta Quadrant vacation destinations when I think of holidays. We do see some holiday celebrations on Voyager. Prixen and whatnot.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And the holodeck is home to the resort that Neelix created based in somewhere in Talax. That's probably the most beautiful destination we've seen.
So on Voyager, they don't really need to go on vacation. Voyager is its own vacation to some extent. But you're right. It was 75 years. If you say, okay, everyone gets 2 weeks of vacation or however much vacation they accrue in Starfleet a year, I have no idea. But let's say it's 2 weeks a year and you get 75 years home. They need to have, 150 weeks of vacation lined up. Mm. Where are they going to take all this vacation?
You're going to the same holodeck all the time. It's going to be boring. Or you'll end up with some wonderfully written holonovels by the Doctor. And who wants that?
I don't know about vacationing in the Doctor's hollow novels. That doesn't sound right. So you told me that you'd done a lot of prep work. You've got notes and notes and notes of vacation ideas for Voyager. I took the other approach. I didn't prepare at all, and I'm going to shoot from the hip a little bit. So I hope you came up with some great ideas that we can talk about. You want to dive in? Let us know what you came up with?
Sure. So the first place that actually could possibly seem like a decent holiday destination is Sakaris from Prime Factors, which also is known as the creepy pleasure planet.
I think maybe I coined that
you
phrase.
Did. I mean, that's how I remember it now. So, I mean, it's a Class M planet, which obviously means it's habitable. But yeah, it's probably...
I hope you have to go to a habitable planet.
Oh, no, there's some beautiful planets that I want to go to that aren't habitable.
And they're on your list.
They're on my list. We'll see. But yeah, no, Sakaris has the whole link to that other planet, Alastria, which is nice and tropical.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to vacation there on Alastria.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so if you get sick of one planet, you just go and explore another. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, with that creepy pleasure guy.
It seems like that's the closest that we see to Ryza in the Delta Quadrant. Mm-hmm. It's not so much a pleasure. It's not a pleasure planet like Ryza, but it has that kind of hedonistic search for novelty kind of quality to it. You know, the Sakaarans are constantly in search of new experiences in one way or another. And then it's not outright hedonism like you get on Ryza, but there is this endless quest for novelty that is vacation-like.
Yeah, and I suppose the Sakaarans, obviously, as they're trying to seek new knowledge and new experiences, I'm not sure if you'd feel like you'd be in a zoo, almost, for them to sort of look at and think, oh, what can they provide us as entertainment today? But as I say, it's probably one of the only planets that we see that hasn't either been blown up or perpetually on fire or completely inhabitable that they go to that could be a nice place to visit.
But with that, the device that lets you... What's the device called? Do you remember what the device is called in that episode? The device that sends you to another planet? Thousands of light years
away? Yeah, all I remembered is that it needed the quartz in the mantle or something of the planet to actually work, which is why they couldn't use it in the end.
It's, in a way, if that were a vacation destination, it would be like the travel hub of the Delta Quadrant. Like, you could go to there for your vacation and then branch off to wherever in the Delta Quadrant you happened to wanted to go to. It'd be like... There's this joke in the United States that to get anywhere, you have to go through Atlanta. It'd be like the Atlanta.
It's the Atlanta of the Delta Quadrant.
Yes, the Atlanta of the Delta Quadrant. Exactly. You have to go there to go somewhere interesting.
No, exactly. I don't know. I feel like going to that planet will probably be the nicest place, considering everywhere else I've got is a disaster.
Uh-oh. I thought you had a good list, not just a disaster.
As I said, the more I think about the places that we could possibly go to along the way in the Delta Quadrant, the more I realize that they're going to kill you.
The Delta Quadrant is dangerous. It's not like the Alpha Quadrant, right? The Alpha Quadrant is relatively pacified, even with its imperialistic quality with the Klingon Empire, the Romulan Empire, and the Federation kind of duking it out over generations. The Delta Quadrant is bad and mean and dangerous. You know, life there is nasty and brutish and short. You know, it's a dangerous place. So what did you come up with? I mean, it's not like we're going to go to planet hell for a vacation. So that maybe didn't make your list, but what?
Why couldn't you go to the demon planet?
I don't know what you'd do there.
Just walk around, investigate what's happening. You're not going to go sipping cocktails. No? You don't want to go to the demon planet?
You could have coffee with your clone.
Yeah, you could also create a whole bunch of clones to do your work on the ship for you.
Yeah. Take a longer vacation, you know, clone yourself, send your clone back and have a year-long vacation on the demon planet.
Why not? And then you see, they're not going to last forever. They'll just melt apart as per Course Oblivion.
Okay, so we're off on a little bit of a tangent, but what is on your list? What did you come up with?
As I said, I've got a whole load of bad planets.
Let's do them. What are the bad vacation destinations? The worst vacation destinations of the Delta Quadrant. Holiday destinations.
Yeah, exactly. The Borg Unicomplex.
Oh, see, that's interesting. I don't know. Wait, do you mean the Unicomplex, not Unimatrix Zero?
Not Unimatrix Zero, the Unicomplex.
Okay, yeah, that would be a bad vacation destination.
Mm. I mean, you can say it's a balmy 39 degrees there all the time. 92% humidity.
It's tropical. Yeah. You know, Borg cubes are tropical.
You could argue that, sure, it's very multicultural.
That's one way to look at a Borg cube. It's multicultural, sure. It's a little hegemonic, maybe. But, you know.
Potentially. But you could probably get away with it, though, if you have one of those life sign hiding things that Seven's irresponsible dad had.
Mm-hmm. Now, in all seriousness, I did actually come up with Unimatrix Zero. Mm. Like, that actually wouldn't be a bad vacation destination. That's kind of like going on vacation in the holidays.
That's like a holiday in your head. We all have those when sitting at work.
Yeah, I mean, we all do that all the time anyway, right? It's what it means to have an active imagination. Mm. But so, yeah, that would be the Borg what's it called?
The Unicomplex.
What would you do there?
I was looking up on Memory Alpha, and apparently it's got 600 kilometers of structure to explore, so okay. You could wander around.
It's kind of like spelunking, like going through the corridor caves of the Unicomplex. Spelunking? Cave diving?
Oh, I've never heard of that word before.
Oh, really? It's called spelunking?
Okay, cool. It could be like whatever that word was.
Yeah, it's like, you know, going through the narrow passages and around the corridors and the dark ways where you can't see what's around. It's basically a cave complex, maybe.
Pure life signs are hidden. You could pretty much get away with doing anything you want on there, don't you think?
So you would basically be like Lord of the Rings with the invisibility ring.
Great example. Or that you could cloak just, thing in Harry Potter.
Right. Or the Ring of Gyges, as it's known from Plato.
Yes.
So you could say, so in other words, you could be the poltergeist of the Borg Unicomplex.
Yeah. Oh, you could have so much fun pranking the drones, couldn't you?
You could prank the Borg.
Yes. You know what? That's a see. We turned a bad holiday
that
destination.
That sounds like a pretty good vacation.
We turned a bad place into a good place.
A little risky if you get caught, but if you have a genuine invisibility cloak or whatever to make you invisible, you know, mask your life signs, then you're in like Flynn. No problem.
As an aside, I did say this episode will be pretty silly.
Oh, we never do silly on To the Journey.
Never. Not at all.
Well, it's funny. You were asking me earlier about the difference between my two podcasts, Metatreks and To the Journey. And, you know, in Metatreks, I'm a lot more serious and I focus on philosophy and we have deep discussions. For me, To the Journey has always been a little more lighthearted. Even when we're talking about serious topics, we try to do it in a fun way. So we are not afraid of being silly on To the Journey. As you know, a different side of my personality comes out when I do this show compared to doing my other show.
Yeah. See, I don't think going to the Borg Unicomplex would be that bad a thing.
You'd have to be one to live dangerously. You'd have to like riding the ragged edge of disaster a little bit.
And if you get assimilated, well, it's almost like when Kim got in that glowing space herpes. It's like you get assimilated. It's just like other diseases you can get from having too much fun on holiday. Sorry. Oh, dear.
So I have to admit, I did not think of the Borg Unicomplex as a natural vacation destination. So it sounds like we're really coming up with the anti-vacation destinations. And that's okay. We can be ironic. That's fun. What else you got?
I mean, I can find a reason to go to any of them.
Where do you want to go, though? That's the $64,000 question.
Now,
what's on your list?
Probably the most realistic place that I'd want to go to would be that planet from 30 Days, the water planet.
Oh, that's a fascinating idea.
Just to go down, see what's actually in the depths of the ocean, mining out the giant eel. You don't want that to come and get you, but
this is like the Delta Quadrant version of swimming with the dolphins for a vacation.
Yeah, it's just like going to SeaWorld or something, but scarier.
If you're a marine biologist, that's definitely where you want to go on vacation in the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, I've done first year marine science at uni. But no, that would be really interesting. I mean, you'll never know when you'll lose containment and die, but at the same time, still be fun.
If the Enterprise were lost in the Delta Quadrant instead of Voyager, Cetacean Ops would be having a field day.
Yes, exactly. Joe, I didn't know there was a Cetacean Ops until that episode of Earl Grey.
Yep, and it's actually in Next Generation.
Is it actually in the show? I don't remember it being in there.
It's mentioned
once. Oh, that's probably why I don't remember then.
Yeah, it's very subtle, but it's in
What would you do at the 30 Days water planet?
That's a good question. I'm not into water sports so much. I used to like water skiing when I was younger. I haven't done that in a long time. I like boating a little bit. I'm not a nautical aficionado like Tom Paris is, so I'm not, you know, I don't have seafaring, you know, ambitions.
I mean, to be fair, it was probably the only episode we saw those ambitions.
It seemed very tacked in there, didn't it?
Definitely.
always wanted to be an old sea dog.
That's like Chakotay with his ancient Mars missions or something. It's like, well, that's out of the blue and never spoken about again.
I guess there's something, I don't know, I like the exploration aspect. I mean, even in our own planet, you know, we're constantly discovering new things about the ocean. So, you know, I can't help but geek out a little bit and go, I'd love to do some comparative alien xenobiology, xenomarine biology on vacation. Is that a vacation thing to do?
It could be.
For a college professor like me, maybe. I don't know.
When I go on actual holiday on Earth, I guess I tend to go about trying to learn as much as I can about the culture of the places that I go to. And about the history of a lot of things. So it'll probably interest me a lot more than just sitting down and having a cocktail in a submarine.
So running with this water planet vacation idea, would you spend your time above the water sailing the gigantic sea or below the water submarining or scuba diving in the enormous planet-wide sea? What would you do there?
I get seasick. Quiet. Easily. So being above water would probably be a bad idea. But I do like to go kneeboarding, so I'll probably do some of that. I wouldn't do water skiing because I'd probably break every limb quite easily. So I'll probably spend most of my time underwater. Scuba diving would be fun, except I don't want that eel to eat me.
I think with scuba diving, I would be one of these people that almost panics a bit when I go underwater with the scuba gear on.
Have you ever been scuba diving?
No, it sounds terrible.
It's weird. Like the whole idea of trying to realize that you can breathe underwater, I found odd.
Not much really freaks me out, but I think I might actually have a hard time adjusting to breathing naturally underwater.
Yeah.
You know, weird environments don't really freak me out much in general, but I think scuba diving might actually do it.
I swam face first into a large fish. That was scary.
At least it wasn't a swordfish.
Impale myself, gosh. Yeah. Should we move on to another one?
Absolutely. What else you got?
What one would actually be all right to visit? What about the basics planet?
That planet's not bad. There's a lot of wide open spaces. You just have to avoid going in the caves.
Yeah. I mean, anthropologically speaking.
No spelunking on that planet. You can spelunk on the Borg Unicomplex, but you can't spelunk on that planet.
No. But I mean, it would be interesting to see and watch, I'm going to call them Neanderthals because I don't know what else to call them, but how they...
Space Neanderthals. Yes.
Oh, well. So it'd be interesting to see the space Neanderthals go about their lives, knowing that that's what we used to be like thousands of years ago. And especially as it's geologically unstable. So as an aside, I study physics and maths to be a meteorologist, but I also have an interest in geology. So all that kind of...
I was going to say, you're taking a very scientific approach to this, both to the water planet and this planet.
So you
would want to build a duck blind on...
A what?
On this planet. A duck blind. Remember the episodes? This happened in Star Trek twice. There was the episode of The Next Generation where they're studying the proto-Vulcan culture, and they have the holographic thing in the mountain.
Yes, yeah, no, I remember. That's called
a duck blind. Yeah, like you're hunting for ducks. Oh. You know, behind a thing. That's why it's called a duck blind. It hides you essentially, and also in Insurrection. They have the same basic setup, you know, a duck blind and built into a mountain. So you would be a duck blind builder on this planet.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll go...
To study the space Neanderthals.
Yeah, no, I would sit in one of those and just watch. I'd also like to just go around, and I think it's called tramping, at least that's what it's called in New Zealand, or even here maybe, and just go around and see the environment and what's happening, especially the volcanoes. I love volcanoes.
What I remember about that episode is this quest for interesting food items to keep them alive. Like, they have to find something to eat on this planet. So this would be like foraging, you know, you'd forage for Delta Quadrant truffles or something to keep you alive. Like, you're constantly truffle hunting on this planet.
Do you know, out of all these planets, I did not think about where I could get food from.
Well, I remember them eating some sort of grub-like, mealworm-like things. I remember... What were they? Were some sort of fruit that was poisonous, right?
Whatever it was, I probably wouldn't have eaten it because I'm such a picky eater. Right.
So you can't go in the caves. You got to be careful what you eat. But there's not much to eat, so you'll have to spend a lot of your time foraging on this planet.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. That's a bad planet to visit now. Like, just like the rest of them. Or where else would you think is a anti-destination, I guess?
So, you know what just came to my mind is the planet from the episode Living Witness. And it's a bit of a cheat because all we see of this planet is like 700 years in the future when Voyager's long since gone from the Delta Quadrant. And we basically get to see this alien museum centered around Voyager and the events of Voyager's interaction with this planet. But I thought that was an interesting planet. You know, they're historically minded people. I've got an interest in history and genealogy and things like this. So I'd love to just kind of wander around this museum looking at all the Voyager artifacts 700 years in the future. I think that would be interesting.
No, that would be. See, I mean, I suppose it's just like going to a museum here, a museum from another culture's perspective, and I guess seeing how the events of Voyager has actually shaped their culture, I guess with the different species arguing and not agreeing with each other, that would be an interesting idea. I didn't even think of going to the Living Witness planet.
Yeah, it'd be like going to a museum in Egypt or going to a museum in, you know, one of these history museums, not just like an art museum, but like a history museum. You know, as Voyager at that point, 700 years in the past, is creeping up on being an ancient culture at that point. And
do you imagine what it would be like 700 years in the future if we witnessed what we did now and how it would be perceived compared to what is actually happening?
I'm of two minds about this because on the one hand, you can really question whether or not you can understand the historical context of various events. You know, the major events will be recorded, names and dates and key players and whatnot, and they'll have some sense of the causal factors between these historical events. On the other hand, though, it's all very opaque. And to me, what's interesting is the paper trail people really do leave. All the papers you sign and the documents and how you're related to everything, all of that's written down, especially in the internet age. It's not written down on paper, but, you know, your interactions are recorded in some data bank somewhere, able to be reconstructed by someone. So it's an interesting question how much of our current civilization will be reconstructible, you know, 700 years from now, and how much of it will be incomprehensible because of its historical context. I don't really know, but I'd love to look back on Voyager in 700 years. And I like this idea that this lone starship, you know, lost in the Delta Quadrant on their way home, is such a key player in the history of this planet. Like, the crucial event in history in this planet is Voyager. And that's awesome. They made such an impact, even if they completely got it wrong about what actually happened.
Yeah. Well, that sort of segues beautifully into one of the other planets that Voyager is a key player in, and that's the planet from Blink of an Eye.
Oh, what a great idea. I mean, this is like a duck blind writ large, right? Mm. If you built a duck blind on this planet, you can witness thousands and thousands of years of history. If you could somehow isolate yourself from the difference in the timeline, just like the aliens on that planet are able to do, right? Or eventually their technology progresses to the point where they can compensate for the difference in time frame. That's how they can come on board at the end of the episode and interact normally with the crew. If it worked in reverse, if you could have like some sort of a temporal shield around yourself so you could go down to this planet and witness thousands of years of that planet's history while your own time frame continues, that'd be an awesome vacation.
See, that would be cool because you could witness everything from like medieval planet right the way through to, you know, post-warp, which I think from an anthropological point of view would be fascinating, especially as you won't have to be gone for that long.
It's risky, though, because if your temporal shield breaks down, you end up incorporated in that planet's time frame and you live your entire life literally in the blink of an eye.
Yeah. I think that's just like a lot of the planets, they're all risky to go to, aren't they?
It's at least as risky as the Borg Unicomplex, I would think.
What is it that Janeway says? Weird is part of the job. So is risky. And so is risk.
Risk is our business, as Captain Kirk said.
See, I reckon wearing a time suit in that would be fascinating. And there's another place that you could wear a time suit and see what happens. Where do you reckon that will be?
I'm not sure what you have in mind.
The Krenim homeworld.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine sitting there just in your time suit and then a temporal incursion occurs and then you're like, oh, cool. Now this is completely different to what it was 10 seconds ago.
If you have a Machiavellian bent to your personality, being on the time ship is where you want to go on vacation. You can control the destinies of entire civilizations at the push of a button. You know, if you have a megalomania complex, that's where you want to go on vacation.
Or just change the time yourself. Wow.
That's what I mean. Right, exactly.
Would you do that, though? I feel like I would be... I'd feel so guilty just wiping out all sorts of civilizations just to change timelines.
But you get to eat food and drink and look at the precious artifacts of civilizations that literally never existed. How cool is that?
I mean, I'm the kind of person that will drink $3 bottle of wine, so the drink probably wouldn't be a thing for me. I just feel terrible, although the artifacts could be cool.
If you like rare wine, that's the place to go on vacation.
See, we've managed to sell the time ship of Year of Hell, at least.
I wouldn't want to be on one of the planets. I think I'd want to be on the time ship itself.
That'd be cool. I mean, a lot of the places we can actually make quite nice. I mean, we've already said the Borg Unicomplex can be a nice tropical 39 degrees. So I guess the time ship
could
be good.
And good for spelunking.
Exactly. How do you reckon we could sell, I don't know, what's another place that I think would be cool? What about Vidia? Come here and get a terminal disease?
No, I actually think it's better than that. I think if you go to the Vidian homeworld, that's where you want to go if you have medical conditions. That's, you know, that's where they can graft new skin onto you. They can give you an organ transplant. If you've got medical problems, that's where you go on vacation because they will keep you alive.
Would they, though? They'll just take your skin. It's like, oh, you don't need this nose. I'll take it.
That's an interesting question. Do the Vidians, I guess the Vidians approach everyone as, you know, essentially organ donors, organ hosts, but what would it take to be on their side? Would you have to masquerade as one of them? Would you have to dress like a Vidian and kind of do yourself up as a Vidian, but on some Vidian cosplay and makeup, and then they'll try to cure you?
Can you imagine doing Vidian cosplay at STLV?
I've never seen anyone do that, actually. That's a great idea.
If I had the money to come to STLV, I would totally try and do that, because that would be an absolutely mental cosplay.
You don't see a lot of Vidian cosplay.
No.
Don't.
But, I mean, there was supposed to be like a planet of artists and, you know, philosophers and educators, so that'll be your kind of place to visit, I guess, if they weren't so sick.
I guess so. Maybe if I had one of those personal shields where I didn't have to worry about them harvesting my organs while I'm trying to philosophize, I might go there to philosophize on vacation.
But... yeah. I think that would be kind of a cool planet to visit just to see the goriness of it all.
I wonder if there are remnants of their great civilization. Like, are there monuments and ruins and columbariums of their you know, once great culture, like you get in ancient Greece? Like, you can see the remnants of a great culture. Same thing in Rome. You know, do they have these artifacts of great civilizations on the Vidian homeworld, despite the decline in their culture?
I reckon they would. I mean, we've got all of those, as you say, in Rome and in Italy and, like, all the Renaissance. Is it Renaissance in Florence? I mean, of course, they're going to have it, and that will be a beautiful thing to see whilst dodging, you know, organ harvesters.
So yeah, if you're an archaeologist or an art historian, maybe, or an architect, yeah, maybe that's where you want to go.
Yeah, no, I can see that. See, look, we're doing such a good job of selling this. We could be travel agents for the Delta Quadrant.
We could sell ice to an Eskimo.
We could. Are there any other planets that you can think of? Or I've got a couple more.
I actually wouldn't mind going to the Ocampan homeworld.
That's where I was going to go to, yeah.
You wouldn't get a lot of time in the sunlight, so if you're trying to get a tan, that's not the place to go.
Well, you could get a tan if you decided to crawl up to the top.
Yeah, you'd have to work for it.
Unless you mean staying in the Ocampan, like, underground.
I was thinking about staying in the Ocampan underground.
Yeah, see, I would go the different route. I want to be above ground just to see all the ruins and of what their culture once was before they lost their nucleogenic particles in their atmosphere.
I'm not sure why I really wanted to go there. The Ocampans seem like nice people. They're essentially hobbits, right? I mean, they're short and they live underground. And, you know, so it's like going to the Shire.
That's the New Zealand of the Delta Quadrant.
Exactly.
Again, because I do want to be a meteorologist, the whole idea of what happened to Ocampa by the Nacene and the Caretaker is sort of fascinating, because the nucleogenic particles that they talk about, I mean, we have them here, although we sort of know them as aerosols or cloud condensed nucleogenic, whatever it's called. But that's how the clouds are formed. They have like little water droplets condensed on these little particles in the atmosphere. And that's how they get clouds. But if they've got nothing to condense on, that's where the water's all gone.
Interesting. And
See, that kind of thing fascinates me. And if you can see some of, just like you said about the ancient stuff from the Vidian homeworld that's been left behind because of the phage, they'd have a lot of ruins and stuff from the Okompan culture as well to visit.
And the Okompans just seem like nice people.
Oh, but do they? They set fire to things.
Only some
unless
of them.
When yeah, only Kes.
It's only Kes. Kes isn't a nice person when it comes down to it.
I suppose most places we've been to, most of the people are scary. Vidians, Borg, your clones.
What else you got? Where else do you want to go? These are great examples. A lot of these I wouldn't have come up with, so I'm glad you came up with them.
Now, the last one that I've thought of, and I've left this to last purposely because it is, you could make it whatever you want to be. And that would be the Q Continuum.
Oh, sure. Yeah. In fact, we just did an episode of Metatrex about this.
Yeah. I mean, provided you have some Q as an actual friend and not some, you know, omnipotent pain in the butt, they could make the Q Continuum be whatever you want it to be or whatever they want you to perceive it to be.
That's an interesting question. Is the Q Continuum kind of like the holodeck where you get to choose the metaphor, metaphorical way it's presented to your limited, finite human understanding? You know, you can't take the Q eye or God's eye perspective on it, so it's got to be metaphorical, as Q says. But do you get to choose the metaphor? Is it basically an omnipotent, omniscient, eternal holodeck? Or is it the Q who decide how it's presented to your, you know, finite, puny human understanding?
It was portrayed as that desert road, which wouldn't be interesting, but it's also the...
Unless you're the Scarecrow.
Was it the Civil War? What was that?
Unless you decide to be the Scarecrow for a while, that's a blast. You got to try that.
Well, we can always give it a go for a couple of 100,000 years.
Even Q has been the Scarecrow once in a while.
Even Q. If you had a friend who was the Q, what would you make them, or what would you see if you could get them to show the Q Continuum as? Or I guess I'm saying, what would be the most ideal destination for you that they could create?
Well, this is like the holodeck, right? I mean, if I could be...
Oh, I suppose it is, it's outside.
It's outside. It's outside the universe. It's really outside. It's outside space and time. It's really outside.
Yeah, it's better than a stuffy old holodeck.
Stuffy old planet, you know.
Just go all out and go outside of space and time. Why not?
Well, okay, this is the direction I was going. Like, frankly, the Delta Quadrant doesn't have much in the way of vacation spots. They're all harsh and brutal to some degree, with a couple of exceptions. So really, we're talking about the holodeck when we're talking about vacation on Voyager. So
pretty much now, yeah.
It's an interesting question for everyone. If any of us had a holodeck, where would we go? What kind of environment would we create? What's your paradise environment? If you were on Voyager and you couldn't actually go to one of these planets, or they're not very desirable, where would you actually go on vacation if you were a member of the crew?
See, that's a very difficult question.
Do you have a sacred spot for yourself?
Each of these planets have something that I would actually really enjoy, which is the weird thing. I honestly feel like I would probably enjoy a holiday in a safe area. This is going to sound terribly like Jurassic World or something, but sort of a basics planet with dinosaurs, with the Earth not fully formed properly, yet in a safe place with a protective suit. Not just Risa or Egypt or
what would you need the protective London. Suit for?
Dinosaurs.
Protect you from the dinosaurs?
I don't know. I was just trying.
This is a good point. Not only can you vacation to any one of the planets we've already talked about, you could actually vacation with the dinosaurs in the Delta Quadrant, or their descendants at least.
The Voth, yes. That's it. That's where I want to go.
If you want to hang out with dinosaurs, the Delta Quadrant has you covered.
That's it. That's where I want to go. I want to go to the Voth, like, city ship, see the Voth, and then have them take me back in time to the Voth homeworld, which is Earth. A few million years ago. We've gone on such a tangent with this episode, haven't we?
It actually reminds me a bit of the episode All Good Things, the end of The Next Generation, when Q takes Captain Picard back to the dawn of life on Earth. That would be neat to see, something like that. If you had the power of the Q at your command to, you know, where to go on vacation, like, what are the key moments? Like, okay, it'd be cool to see the origin of life, like we see in that episode of TNG. Would it be cool to go back in time and, like, oh, I could watch the Kennedy assassination, like, stand under the, you know, book depository building and watch the shotgun come out? You know, if you could, you know, basically the Q powers are kind of a time travel machine. Like, you can go anywhere, anytime. Same thing with the Nexus. You know, it's similar to the Nexus in Generations. It's the same kind of plot device, really. You know, it's something that magically wisps you away to a different place, different time, different whatever. Same thing with the holodeck. They're all the same basic plot device, right? So it's interesting. You can go, if you could go any place, like a super special place or like an interesting time, or maybe both. But I think for me, if I had to pick a place, like, do I have a sacred place? For me, it's probably Tuolumne Meadows in Yosemite is a place where I spent many wonderful, happy hours camping. Like, I'd go camping with my grandmother when I was a teenager. And wonderful memories, a place that feels instantly like home just being there. But I, you know, if I were lost in the Delta Quadrant, I'd want to recreate something like that, I think. I'm not sure that's, you know, terribly important, but, you know, it's something sentimental. But if you had the power of the Q, if it were a Q-size holodeck, you know, if you could be in the Q continuum, if you had powers of the Q to wisp you away to any point in space and time in the entire universe, what would that be? The world is your oyster. The universe is your oyster in that situation.
There could be so many things that you could do. And I mean, to your point about going to Yosemite, those kind of sentimental places are places where you feel most comfortable and most at ease. And that's what a holiday, in a way, is about, to sort of relax yourself. And if that's the kind of thing that you want to do on a holiday, then a sentimental place is a really good idea to visit. I can't think of anything that's too sentimental for me, being across two different countries.
You don't long for anything sentimental in the UK?
No.
No.
I mean, my family's there. Like my mum, dad, and my sister are in Australia, but like the rest of my family there, and it is nice to visit. I suppose, I guess, maybe seeing family, but I can just jump on a plane to do that. I don't need Q to do that for me.
Well, an interesting mental exercise here might be to think about where the different crew members on Voyager would actually go on vacation. And I think we've already decided going on vacation in the Delta Quadrant is a basic disaster. So really, we're talking about the holodeck. And we see, you know, various characters in Voyager choosing to do different activities on the holodeck, essentially going on vacation. Captain Janeway, where does she vacation on the holodeck?
She would probably vacation back in 1800s Victoria. We've already seen her do that in the holodeck.
Yeah, or hang out with Leonardo da Vinci. It's always very historical for her, which is interesting because I don't really get that sense from her that she's super nostalgic for history otherwise. She's not a history buff like Captain Picard is.
But she went for da Vinci, though, because of his scientific...
Yeah, stuff. That's true. And in a way, maybe the same is true of the Victorian era in general. It's on the cusp of scientific progress. You know, the world changed a lot in that time period.
Mm.
I'm not sure what the appeal is for that for Captain Janeway. Maybe the writers hadn't really decided either.
I mean, are we trying to find somewhere in the Delta Quadrant that they would go? Or do you mean like any?
I would say either way. Like, you know, where would they choose to go? And where would they go if they could go anywhere, like in the holodeck?
That's a tricky one, actually.
Extrapolate beyond what we see on the screen, in other words. Like, you know, we know what they actually do on screen, but, you know, if they were coming up with something new to do, what might they do? Let's start with B'Elanna. Where might she go? Now, we know B'Elanna reads Klingon romance novels, so I actually think B'Elanna is the one who's going to go hang out in the holodeck and, you know, and play Victorian romance, but...
She's also into a lot of extreme sports as well.
Yeah, she
based
is.
Based on extreme risk.
She would be spelunking on the holodeck.
Yeah, create herself her own Borg unicomplex. Oh, God, it's hard. I've never thought about this before.
Now, Tom would almost certainly be doing something daredevilish, right? You know, he'd be racing or he would be, you know, Tom's an extreme sports kind of guy too, but more in like, you know, a hot rod kind of sense. Like, you know, he's going to be pod racing in the holodeck, essentially.
Yeah.
To mix our Star Trek and Star Wars metaphors.
He'll be an F1 racer.
Yeah, exactly. So Tom's easy to figure out. Or he's going to play captain of a ship out there on the open seas, being an old salty sea dog, you know.
To make a reference to what Mulgrew or Kate Mulgrew is doing in real life, do you reckon she'll go back in time in the holodeck and watch things like Marie Curie? Because Kate Mulgrew is doing a play in real life as part of the Marie Curie story. I reckon, given her keen interest in science, she'd want to see some of those famous moments being discovered, or those famous scientific discoveries.
My fundamental question here is that something she would do for an hour and then get bored with? Is this vacation worthy, in other words? Is this something you could do for a week on vacation?
She probably wouldn't even take a vacation, really.
Most captains don't, right?
No.
They can't stand it. It's not the right personality type, you know? Oh, I know where Harry would go. Harry would just recreate his parents' house and spend a week there on the holodeck.
He'd just go to Earth.
Either go to San Francisco where Libby is, or he'd recreate his parents' home and go there. Mm. He longs for home so much, that's where he would go.
Definitely. Tuvok would just want to go back to Vulcan.
I don't know. I think Tuvok would definitely go take the science approach like you're doing. So I think of all the crew members, maybe Tuvok is closest to your mindset. Even though he's the tactical officer, he definitely is science-minded too. I could see him gardening for a week, growing his Vulcan or prized Vulcan orchids for a week on the holodeck as a vacation.
That would be so boring.
No, that's a Tuvok vacation, isn't it?
I reckon, yeah, boring.
And Neelix would not let him hear the end of it. Like, that's what you're doing on vacation, Mr. Vulcan? Come to the resort instead.
Yeah. What would the doctor do? I mean, he can only physically go to the holodeck. Oh, no, he can. He's got his mobile emitter.
Oh, and no, he's a sightseer. He'd want to go. He would be the one going to all these planets taking pictures with his holo camera.
With that 1 square meter camera.
Absolutely. He would want to create like the world's longest PowerPoint slide presentation to show everyone his photos when he gets back. That's the doctor.
We are not letting him go on holiday.
At every turn.
Based
it's
on
like,
that slideshow, we are not letting him go.
Yep. That's the doctor would be the one person who wants to visit all these planets.
And he'd be the one person that will be able to, though, as well.
Right, exactly. Without the protective gear, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't need the scuba gear.
As long as his mobile emitter can handle it.
Wouldn't need the temporal shield. Wouldn't need any of it.
Would he need the temporal shield? He probably would. Oh, no, he didn't, did he?
Well, he was only down there a little while, right? So
yeah, true. Although he did say that it felt like a long time and that he settled down.
It was like 5 years or something, right? Or a couple of years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kes.
Boy, that's an interesting question. I think, you know, Kes is an interesting adventurer because, you know, the Akampa don't leave their world. So she's kind of the adventurous person of her race. I think she would be one to sign up for novelty. You know, she would,
like what?
I don't know, she would want to see something no one of her species has seen before.
Mm.
She'd want to be out there on the frontier.
But, I mean, she could almost do whatever she wants once she's got those powers.
Or destroy anything she doesn't like.
Yeah, true. I've never actually thought about this, Zach.
No, me either. That's why this
so
is
I'm actually really struggling to think about where they would go.
How about Chakotay, then? Kes is hard. I'm not sure where Kes would go. I think she's adventurous, so she wouldn't mind seeing something strange and weird. She's, you know, for an Okampa, she's the Indiana Jones of the Okampa planet, right? So,
yeah. See, I think Chakotay would want to go somewhere that's peaceful, relaxing,
yeah,
and full of nature.
So we can
and whether that's stereotyping, I don't know. But
no, he'd want to commune with his spirit guide, sure.
Mm, quiet and quiet contemplation, nothing too over the top.
Or he'd want to do some archaeology. He'd want to go to any of the planets we mentioned involving archaeology.
Yeah, so the basics planet, mm-hmm. or back to Akampa. Yeah, it'll be a quiet holiday. Not my kind of holiday. What about Seven?
I think she'd be in the no vacation category right off the bat, but
vacations are irrelevant.
Vacations are irrelevant, yes.
Am I missing someone?
Oh, how about Neelix?
Oh my God, how can we forget about Neelix? He would want to go and do everything, absolutely everything he could, don't you think?
I do think so. Although, you know, of everyone on the crew, Neelix is he's the party animal, right? You know, he likes hanging out with the Klingon women. He likes his resort planet. For vacation, Neelix wants to be where the party is.
Yeah, definitely. He would want to go wandering around the bush.
He'd be organizing the party. I mean, he'd be putting the organizing. He'd be the events director, like the event coordinator of the cruise vacation. That's it. He wants to organize a crew. He's a cruise ship director. That's who he is.
God, he will be the travel agent for the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah,
he'll exactly. be doing just what we're doing. Come to the Unicomplex. It's beautiful weather there all year round.
Or he'd be sampling the culinary delights of the Delta Quadrant too. He could be in search for recipes. I could see Neelix doing that.
Find the birthplace of the Leola root, something like that.
Is Leola root a Talaxian root? It's from Talax.
Is it from Talax? No, is it?
I don't know. I never bothered to look. I assumed it was, but maybe they say in Voyager and maybe they don't. Maybe they do and I can't remember.
Yeah,
I had assumed it was a Talaxian ingredient.
It doesn't actually say where it's from. There's a whole memory alpha page about Leola root, though. Yeah, no. He'll go around foraging for food and cruise directing.
I feel like every planet, what we didn't see on screen is that every planet that Voyager goes to, Neelix is right there with his recipe book writing down the best recipes he can find from that planet.
Can you imagine him doing that?
Yes, I can.
Just standing there. It's like, oh, this could be interesting. And then you got someone like Tuvok going, put that down, Mr. Neelix.
Put your recipe book down, Mr. Neelix.
24th century cook show.
Collecting the most exotic spices.
This one comes from Vidia, full of fame.
I think it's a given now that, I mean, maybe Voyager, it's an interesting question. Is the Delta Quadrant really this plagued for vacation spots? Is we're just looking at such a small sample that's not representative of the Delta Quadrant in general? Or is the Delta Quadrant really this dangerous compared to the Alpha Quadrant?
We've only obviously seen the planets on the path that Voyager's taken. I mean, you probably would find some decent places to visit along the way. I mean, there could be a riser of the Delta Quadrant, but I think we haven't seen it, obviously, so we can make a decent show and a lot of conflict or, I guess, jeopardy for the characters. That's why we haven't seen anywhere decent.
I don't think they're going to get a lot of vacation, honestly, in Voyager. I think...
Oh, no. I mean, they've got one ship to run. There's no one to replace
it. It's a little optimistic that every member of the crew is going to get 150 weeks of vacation over 75 years on Voyager.
I reckon so. And even then, if that's the case, they got to share the holodeck time and it doesn't work. I mean, if it's, 150 people on board, if they have 2 weeks of leave a year, that means there's one person on leave pretty much throughout the whole year.
And like, what are they going to do? Is Voyager just going to stop while the crew members go to some planet to take a vacation? No, Voyager's got to keep moving home. There's no time for anyone to go to a planet and take a vacation. Voyager's not going to sit around and wait for 2 weeks, right?
They'd all have to vacation in the same spot. Can you imagine the arguments there? That's why we do need Neelix as a cruise director.
So Voyager can be the vacation. I guess that's my point. Voyager needs to be the vacation. It has to be its own vacation.
Yeah, that's the cruise ship.
Voyager is the cruise ship. Yes, exactly.
There we go. That's. I mean, let's face it. I would love to go on holiday and just be on Voyager.
Well, I think for any of us Star Trek fans, we'd go, we don't want to go anywhere else. We just want to be on the bloody ship.
No, exactly.
Well, Liam, I'm glad you could join me here on To the Journey today while Suzanne is having technical difficulties. Hope it was fun for you to be on To the Journey. We don't have guests on To the Journey as a matter of course. Char and Tristan didn't have many guests on To the Journey. Suzanne and Kay and I haven't had many guests on To the Journey. And you hit us in a moment of weakness and decided, it'd be fun to have someone else and reinvigorate the show. It's been a little while since we've done an episode. And frankly, we're trying to think of ways to reinvigorate the episodes, get some new voices and get some new perspectives and have fun with To the Journey again. It's been a little while since we've done an episode. So thanks for kicking us into gear and getting an episode recorded.
Oh, no. Thanks for having me on, Zach. Sorry that Suzanne couldn't be here. I was looking forward to podcasting with the both of you. And yeah, hopefully can get some more TTJ episodes out because I do love hearing them.
Yeah, we plan to be back doing more episodes soon. So thanks for kickstarting us and thanks for joining us. This was a great episode. I'm not sure I had much to say about Voyager holiday destinations. There aren't many in the Delta Quadrant. And I think I just want to hang out on the ship. Frankly.
Yeah, pretty much. And the Voth. I'd still love to see the Voth.
Okay, that would be cool. You convinced me on that one. Well, it's been fun talking about Voyager holiday destinations this week, but this isn't the only thing we've been discussing here on Trek FM. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I bought it when it first came out. I played it for like 2 or 3 days and I went, what is going on? Am I missing something? Is just I'm not a good player. So, and then I checked on the reviews online, and everyone agreed that it was not a good game, and we were all correct.
Literary Treks.
But that's why I bring this back around. Why it was so cool, the Klingon battle cruisers, to distinguish them not being the smooth-sided, cheapy little things from the series. Gene gives them this. Never is this uttered on screen, but every little tech nerd knows what a Katinga, Klingon battlecruiser is. And it's only because Gene came up with that word and gave it to them in the novel. It's not in the movie. Nobody says, Captain, we're picking up three Klingon Takinga heavy battlecruisers on the, Epsilon 9.
Earl Grey.
When you go on a date, you're going out to dinner and that's like the standard date number one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe things are different in the 24th
maybe.
Century.
Maybe.
But okay, all right.
I mean, you could be assuming this is the first time they've shared breakfast together.
Maybe. That's a wild assumption.
Maybe they're back. Right.
And introducing our newest show, The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
Mike, I wanted to make a comment about something that you said about being mostly the middle for a lot of these comic book franchises. It actually makes me think Star Trek, in a way, is something that keeps going and going, 764 installments now, without a specific end necessarily. Maybe it'll come someday. But
These Are the Voyages was a love letter to the fans. What are you talking about, Justin?
You know what I mean.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone. Who has a Windows Phone anymore, by the way? In most third-party podcast apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode of To the Journey, and there are many ways for you to share your thoughts with us. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Well, speaking of contact information, Liam, when you're not hiding behind your duck blind studying ancient space Neanderthals, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
So you can find me hiding on the Babel Conference. I'm in there a fair bit. You can also message me on Facebook from there if you like. I've also recently got Twitter at LS74656. So feel free to follow me on there.
That's a nice Voyager handle there, by the way.
It is. I wanted to think of something Voyager related. So I thought, why not have the numbers? So Zach, when you're not spelunking your way through a Borg cube, where can we find you?
The Borg cube of life.
Borg cube of life.
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of MetaTrek, Trek FM show dedicated to Star Trek and philosophy. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me in there, and you're welcome to follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Frueling. Well, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, we invite you to become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and many more, all available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these podcasts each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. Well, there are a few people we'd like to thank from around the Trek FM network. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, who happens to take fewer vacations than Captain Janeway. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, and Richard Marquez, our production manager. We'd also like to give a thank you and a shout out to our associate producers here for To the Journey. We'd like to thank Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you very much for your support of To the Journey and Trek.fm. Well, be sure to join us next time on To the Journey when we'll be watching the Doctor's Holophotography Vacation Slideshow. But until then, this has been To the Journey.